to the McLeod's Daughters podcast. This is a podcast where two romance authors go episode by episode through the Aussie TV drama McLeod's Daughters. And I am Jessica Kate, and I'm here with my co-host, Rachel Hauck, a New York Times bestselling romance author. And we are up to season two, episode seven. And Rachel, what did you think of this episode?
Ooh, this episode packs a punch. We learned lots of things in this episode, so I'm excited to get into it. Like, I think some of the drama that you and I have been waiting for, and some of the, they spent a lot of time building some story threads, and some of them are finally coming to fruition. So I'm super excited about this episode.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I feel like the drama in this just hits like a whole new level that we haven't quite gotten before in McLeod. So I'm super excited to talk about it. We started talking about it before we even turned the recording on. We're like, we have to stop. We have to save this for the podcast.
Yeah, we'll forget all the great things that we thought.
That is it. So this episode is called Three's a Crowd. It released on the 8th of May, 2002. And the synopsis says, Harry yearns to know all about Peter Johnson, who seems to settle in at Drover's Run. His background check turns up a surprise, but unable to inform Claire himself, he tells Becky he must decide what to do with the information. And I mean, that's a pretty good summary of what's going on. The word yearns makes me laugh because I can't picture Harry yearning for anything.
No. I think the better word would be connived.
Yes.
But I will give Harry this. He had a gut instinct. He used his connections to go a little deeper, and he was spot on.
Yep. I do have to say that even if his motives to begin with were not pure, this is something that I think we're going to talk about a lot as this episode comes up. I feel like Harry cops some undeserved flack in this episode. He does a lot of things that he deserves flack for. But wanting to tell Claire the truth, and even the move of letting Becky be that intermediary, I think was the right move. I don't know if that's controversial or not, but if I was Harry, that's what I would have done. I would have gone, you know, Becky or Meg or Tess, like one of the women, I wouldn't have gone to her directly. I would have gone to someone more trusted.
Maybe. I do think it goes against what we know of him so far. Mm-hmm. Is that he's conniver, manipulator, control freak. Mm. And it seems that he would have loved to have given Claire that bomb, because later we're going to know when the guys discuss it, they bring up the fact that, you know, he still left her Drover's Run. So mm-hmm. It seems to me this would be in Harry's favor. So what we see is a kinder, more human Harry, which I think we need to see every once in a while. So mm-hmm. I would say it gives us a little bit of grace for him, and that he wasn't trying to hurt her.
Mm, yeah, I think I like this. I think he gave it a little bit more depth. Yeah, but let's jump into the episode, and then we can talk about it more when it comes up. So we open this scene with. Now, I have written here Alex and Harry, but they're not talking. So I think I mistyped. I've been having to take notes lately on my phone. It keeps auto-correcting the wrong words, and it makes my notes much harder to read. But they're looking at the new stables. Oh, yeah, no, they are there. Oh, I'm getting mixed up. Okay, I've watched so many episodes together, I'm forgetting, like, what's happened. Alex and Harry are still talking at this point. I've just spoiled something that's going to happen later in the episode. So they're watching new timber roll into Drover's Run for the stables. And Gary speculates, he says these stables mean that Claire is thinking of marriage because she is so protective of Drover's Run. And she's also, I mean, we were only laughing recently about that episode where she was saying that, you know, if she married, she would still be the boss. Her and Alex talking about a hypothetical. If she married Alex, she said, I would still be the boss of Drover's Run. You know, she's not going to just let anybody.
Yeah, exactly.
Build permanent infrastructure on her land. And he's like, this is it. This means she's going to marry him. They're a partnership now. And they imply that she only got the horse contract because they were dating, and they're still really sore that Kalani lost out on that, which is rather uncharitable of them. But this is probably one of the first times we realize how serious Claire is now about making Peter a permanent part of her life.
Well, yeah, and I think, don't we open up seeing them cuddling in bed together?
That's so the very next scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're very much...
They're giggly, they're snuggly. Tess is like wanting to knock on the door and ask Claire something, and she can hear them laughing, and it's really grossing her out, I think.
Come on, she had Alex there. Come on.
Yeah,
come on,
that's
come
it.
Come on, Tess.
That's it. I'm sure they were far more annoying. And, you know, in Claire and Peter's conversation, she's saying, you know, oh, what took you so long to meet me? And it was very sweet and sappy. It didn't feel to me like Claire. I think we've said this before, watching Claire be in love, she's had a brain transplant, which I guess some people do have when they fall in love. But yeah, it feels very un-Claire-like.
It doesn't seem like you should leave your base character. So like if a guy is not romantic or a woman's not romantic, they fall in love, they have a way of expressing their love, but it's not going to be sappy and romantic like a romantic person would do. So she does seem to be a little bit out of her character, like almost schoolgirl giggly.
Mm, very much. And I mean, maybe I get the impression she hasn't really had a serious boyfriend before. So maybe even though Claire is, I'm guessing, in sort of her early 30s, maybe this is kind of the 16-year-old she didn't really get a chance to get coming out. I don't know. Maybe that's a little part of it.
Yeah. She doesn't seem to be a stranger to the bedroom, though.
No. And Tess does interrupt them. She knocks on the door. She says the timber's arrived and Nick wants to borrow a horse, which I did not immediately get the significance of, but we'll come back to that later. Meanwhile, we go over to Jody in the cottage. And, of course, where we left off last episode is her dad has skipped out on her again, and he'd been going to move them all to the Whit Sunday. She has all these pictures of the Whit Sundays on the wall. She rips them all off the wall in very dramatic Jody fashion, and Meg tries to talk to her, saying he's still your dad, but she storms off. And she goes over to Becky's, where Becky is staring at the Cinderella shoe that Brick left on the fence post last episode. About
oh, sweet. Come on, Brick. Come on. Come on, Becky.
And Jody goes over to Becky's and she's like, come on, let's go to work. And it's this total role reversal. Normally Becky wants to work and Jody's the slacker. And Becky comments on that. She's like, who's this weird new Jody? And Jody says she doesn't want to be a slacker like her dad. And meanwhile, Becky's not particularly concerned about Jody and her dad. She's just, she makes a comment that she's stuffed up big time and she's really regretting how things went down with Brick, which I was glad she like came around quickly. You know, we didn't have like a long time where she was mad at him or she was in denial or anything. She's realized, because I feel like she's kind of made that journey already and it was a brief relapse and now she's back to sort of, oh no, that was a quick relapse and now I'm back. So
I would like for you to explain to our American listeners, because I'm not sure I actually understand. When someone says they're stuffed up.
Oh, I did not realize that was mean? Not a common term. It means you messed something up, you screwed something up.
Okay, then that makes sense. Yeah.
Stuffed up, stuffed it. I don't know. Interesting.
In America, that mostly means I ate too much.
Oh, yes. We would use it in that term as well. But yeah, we use it in lots of ways.
Well, there we go. We got a good bit another of Aussie one. Lingo there. I like it. I like it.
Then we go over to Kalani and Terry is having a confrontation with a cop there. He's a new copper. Terry has all these speeding fines that he hasn't paid. He seems very personally insulted that the cop has gone out there to deliver them in person by the sounds of it.
I'm like, come on, Terry, pay your fines.
I'm like,
be a man up.
I mean, he did go to jail for a while. We learned, you know, a while ago when he accidentally got in a fight and, you know, someone was killed. And so he ended up going to jail for manslaughter. So I don't know if he has a bit of an entrenched sort of hatred for the cops. When he talked about that, he kind of felt that, you know, he'd done the wrong thing and had sort of paid his debt to society.
Yeah, he was repentant. Really sweet in there.
I'm not quite sure where this attitude about the police is coming from, but I thought it added a little bit of depth to Terry. You know, he's not always Mr. Nice Guy. So that's interesting.
But, you know, then it goes back to something you and I talk about kind of often. So first of all, let's go back really quick. Why is Tess kind of have an attitude because Peter's staying over?
Oh, this has been annoying me for so many episodes.
I don't,
if there was a reason for it, I would get it. I don't get if she's just annoyed that she feels more distance between her and her sister, if she's suspicious of Peter, if she's just annoyed about the contract. Like, they hint at multiple different things, but at no point do you actually know. As with everything that happens in Tess's brain, especially concerning Nick, you never know what she's actually thinking about it. There's not a clear motivation spelled out.
Well, and also, but the contract doesn't matter because they're not putting any of their own money in. So she keeps saying, my name's on the check too. And I'm like, but you're not writing any checks. You're accepting the checks. And we'll get to that later as part of the story. So again, so for Terry here, I get kind of this other side of him. We all have the other side. Mm-hmm. But I also, it doesn't seem like there's any motivation for him to do this. Like, why is he fighting? I think the guy's name is Dodge. Why is he fighting him on paying the fines? Because if you're not, you're going to go back to prison or jail, and you don't want to go there because you've already been there. So this doesn't kind of make sense to me, but it was entertaining to watch, which is really what television is all about. So there you go.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think we've talked about, if there was one single thing that either of us could probably tweak in McLeod's daughters, it would probably be clearer character motivations at times. I think that's both of our single biggest complaint. But we also know how hard it is to write those sometimes.
We do know that. And we know a lot of times things fall on the cutting room floor, or, you know, things are filmed in different sequences all the time because.
And done in a huge rush, 22 episodes a year or something. Yeah, of course. So.
And this is not a criticism. This is just a fun way for us to look at the show. Again, no criticism. It's an excellent show. We love the show. But that is one of the things that, if you could have had a simple conversation, even one line like, Claire, are you going to marry Peter? What about our relationship? Do I need to move out? Just that.
Does she think it's going too fast? I don't know.
Just even something like that. But see, clearly that's what we see later on, is that Tess is worried that, you know, they don't want the little sister underfoot, which I totally get that, totally appreciate that, get where she's coming from. That was beautiful. Mm-hmm. But why doesn't she just talk to her sister, kind of question? And, you know, I have this problem in writing fiction, or in helping people write fiction. A lot of times something will happen and I'll go, no, you got to go ahead and have the conversation. And I call, then you follow the shrapnel. Mm-hmm. So you drop the bomb and you see where the conversation leads. Like, Claire could have said something and then later come back and said something else, which could have caused a fight. So, and sometimes you don't want to do that because you have certain blocks that you're trying to tell. Like, we're just covering these things. These are the things we need to do to advance the story. So you don't want to slow it down with a bunch of, you know, emotive dialogue when you can just keep moving in and people can guess at what's happening. So anyway, we just want more motivation. That's Rachel's long description of why and how. There you go.
So back to Kalani, Terry yelling at the cop just leads to Harry talking to the policeman. And Harry's kind of butting up to him a little bit, and he says he wants to ask about an investigation for a business matter and ask the cop if there's anyone he knows who could do that thing. So I guess he's kind of asking for like some kind of private investigator. He wants info on Peter Johnson because he's like, look, Claire's marrying this guy and he's going to be next door to me. I want to know everything about him. I want to know the dirt. Which, new levels of manipulation for Harry, but I like it. It's interesting.
I'm glad somebody did it. And by the way, the cop's name is DaCosta. I think it's Frank DaCosta, by the way. I said Dodge, but that was wrong.
He's not the cop that we were dealing with back when Becky had the whole issue with Brian or any of that. He's a different guy. They also have a comment that Harry's sort of asking, or Liz is asking Harry about what's all happening on the farm, and Alex has everything under control. And they make a comment that he's like, oh, I may as well just retire. Like, Alex has sort of got it all handled. And then we're going to see interesting things happen with that soon. Meanwhile, Tess brings Nick a horse that he'd requested. And I was really happy about this. I'm like, I love any conversation between Tess and Nick is always really interesting. And we get a few of them in these episodes. So I really like how much of the boys we're getting, actually. Like, remember early on in the show, there used to be like whole episodes or even multiple episodes where there was no Ryan boys in it. Whereas now we're kind of getting like a nice little dose of Nick and Alex sort of pretty consistently. And I'm really happy.
Yeah, they feel like a regular part of the of the cast. Mm-hmm. And I will say, again, by the way, Nick is wearing sleeves, Jessica. And which is weird because I thought Becky said it was too hot to work outside, but they have, Tess has on a jacket and he has on sleeves when she brings him the horse. But again, there's this flirty little thing going on between them. And I'm just questioning that, like, what? Now we know how he feels and he's been consistent, but what is happening with her? What? I don't know. I don't get this.
They have all these comments here, like Tess is complaining about Claire and Peter. I guess without Claire to talk to anymore, Nick is kind of becoming a little bit of a venting person for her.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe. Nick's commenting that he's got too much to fix on the farm. He can't do it all himself. And Tess offers to help. I think she's feeling very unsort of needed or wanted at Drover's Run. They seem to be focusing at Drover's exclusively on the horse side of the business now. So sort of all the cattle and crop work seems to have disappeared while they focus on the horses, I guess. And
but that still Tess's has to area. Happen.
Yeah.
That still has like, to wouldn't, happen.
Wouldn't Tess be and more Jody's working. Ever? Yeah.
Jody's doing, working. Becky's working. Meg is working. Yeah. Right. No, I don't know.
I didn't really get that, but they make some comments. She's like, oh, I could help. And I can't remember which one of them comments, but one of them says something about, oh, you'd never leave. And I think they were like referencing how much work there is to do, but it was like a little flirtation double. And I was like, oh, look at that. The thing I read under it was flirting. And then it clicked in my head. She was worried about him riding and she gets sort of quite, you know, oh, you know, be careful, sort of concerned, almost girlfriendy kind of thing. Because she's like, do you have to ride? And I'm like, oh, that's right. He's limp. He came off the bull at the rodeo and he broke his leg as a kid and he's got the limp and that's why he rides the bike and Alex is always the one on the horse. But he says there's areas of the farm that are too rough for the bike. And so Tess is kind of like, oh, be careful. And he hasn't actually gotten on the horse yet. So we're still not actually sure that he can. That leg seems to be quite weak. So something to keep an eye on. Meanwhile, Jody and Becky have got a total role reversal happening as they work. And Craig shows up to the farm. Something I noticed over the next two episodes is that Craig appears to have taken over the mail run from the one-armed mailman, Bob.
Yes. I noticed that too.
I don't know if he is a relation of Bob's or if it's now his job or what's been happening. I mean, your son can't just take over your thing at Australia Post usually. Like it's an actual job. But I guess out in the bush, he could... If his dad wants to go on holidays for a while, maybe he could, you know, drive the truck or, I don't know, maybe he works at Australia Post too. And so Craig shows up because in last episode, you know, Becky was upset that Brick didn't come. And Craig was there as Jody's date, but Jody wasn't dancing with him because she wanted to dance with Terry. So Becky took Craig outside and made out with him. And so now Craig is hanging around the farm like, hey, Becky, want to go out sometime? And she's like, but the awkward part is Jody asks him out first because she thinks he's there for her. And so she's like, oh, you know, Craig, let's go out. And Craig's kind of like, oh, hey, Becky, do you want to do something? And Jody didn't know about the kiss. So she finds out, she's mad. Becky says, no, you should go out with Jody. So now Craig's mad. Everybody's mad.
Everybody's mad. And Jody was like, you were with her. And he goes, well, you were supposed to be with me. She was supposed to be with Brick, but you were supposed to be with me. So that's a fun little like teenage love triangle or quadruple or square happening here. Mm. You're supposed to be with Brick, but you made out with him, but you were supposed to be with me and you ditched me for so-and-so. So that was kind of fun.
And I'm enjoying a little bit more of Craig in these next couple episodes. Yeah. I wasn't sure. I was like, oh, maybe he's going to be a bit of a dumb boy. You know, not good enough for these girls or something. But no, he's winning me in these episodes. I like him as a part of the show. So I thought...
Same, me too. He's a good character.
He just wants someone to love. And he's just out there looking for it. So we go back over to Claire and Peter. They're saying goodbye. It's very sappy. Tess is not loving it. Claire's ecstatic. And she even opened the front door for him, like they're leaving and the front door's open, and Tess is like, I thought we didn't open the front door, because that was a callback to the pilot episode where she tries to get in the front door and can't, and there was the whole metaphor where she fixed the door, and Claire's just like, oh, it was too much work for Peter to drive around the back.
Yeah, it takes too long. And now again, we have this weird look on Tessa's face. Sorry, you guys. Tessa's face. And I'm like, what is this? Mm. We know that she's concerned what's going to happen after they get married. But it's just
at this
never
point, they
really,
haven't even articulated.
Like, why? Though. Right. Mm. Which everybody's kind of saying, oh, we think they're going to get married, even though nothing's really happened. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. There we have it.
And then Jody comes by. Tess asks her to help with the fence later when it's cooler. Jody's like, no, I'll go do it now. And it did make me laugh because Tess kind of looks at Meg like, what? Jody's wanting to work in the middle of a really hot day? And Meg's
what
like,
happened?
Let's not jinx it.
Again, can I add, please, can I just say, you're always on Nick's wardrobe. Let me just say, it's a really hot day. And both Meg and Tess have on jackets. I'm just saying.
That is true. That's weird. I remember Posey saying they were often filming out of season. So when in the show it was summer, in reality it was winter and vice versa. So their poor actors were often either freezing or boiling. Maybe they were acting like it was summer and it was actually winter, and so they were trying to keep a little more clothing on. I don't
but
know.
But then Jody has on just like a tank top, and so does Claire. So I don't... I'm confused.
Yeah, I don't know.
This is my thing with some movies as well. Yeah. And you're supposed to be standing in the cold, but you have your jacket open, your collar open, no scarf, no sleeves, no hat, and it's snowing. Huh.
Mm. Now back at Drover's Run, Claire's showing Tess the fancy stable plan. She says Peter's taking care of it. Tess is saying, I'm your business partner. I need to see a contract. I'm thinking that this business makes no sense. I mean, we just questioned why Tess was upset when it's none of her financial risk. I think there probably is a risk in case, like, what if Claire did something and lost her contract with Australian Bloodlines, but they've invested $250,000 into stables on her property. Are they then liable for that? That, I think, is probably where the risk would lie.
I could buy that
investment.
I do buy 100%. She's saying, we're signing a contract. I want to know what you're doing. I want to know who you're.
Yeah.
Puts us on the line, which that would have been easy. I want to see the contract. Oh, the horse association is taking care of all of it. What are we on the line for though? They're not going to just be like, here, you guys do what you want. What are we on the hook for? I think that would have been instead she made it sound like we're going to spend money. And even though Peter says, oh no, the association is going to pay for all of it. It's still never really clear, although I think it is clear and we know why, but she's never clearly stated. There we go.
And there's not like, how are these stables under construction already? Like Tess is 50% over Drona's Run. So this contract should not have been able to be signed without Tess seeing it. How did that happen?
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That part of my sense. Anyway, business is boring. They're saying, I love you. And, you know, Tess is, again, she's not loving it. Tess is trying to bring up issues with Claire, who's too distracted. And so we go back over to Kalani and Wilgle. So we see a little shot of Nick trying to ride for the first time. So he's trying to get all this work done on his own. He's trying to ride the horse on his own, and he just can't get up on the horse. That leg is too weak for him to get up there. And so meanwhile, Tess goes over to Alex and tries to talk some sense into him. She's concerned about Nick, and Alex is defensive, and he's saying, look, if Nick had have asked me for help, I would have looked after him. You know, he didn't need to do this behind our backs. Even if Dad was going to rip him off in the will, I wouldn't have done that. How could he think that of me? You know, I won't help him if he won't ask for it. He's ticked that it all happened behind his back. He thinks that this is revenge for the rodeo. That surprised me a little bit because I know Harry has always blamed Alex for it, but I didn't realize Alex saw Nick as holding a grudge because Nick does not really come across like that. He says, makes a comment about what a way to stick it to me. I'm like, how is Nick buying his own property with his own money and not asking, like, how is that sticking it to you? I guess maybe just in that he sort of took their help and their machinery without planning to share the profits, but like that was going to come out soon anyway when they didn't get the profits. So this whole process only sped up by a couple of months.
What I took from that was not so much that he borrowed the family equipment and all of that, but that Harry is such a control freak. Harry wants everything his way, his time, And he sees his ranch as this big estate that'll eventually have Drover's Run. And I think he feels like Nick leaving is him leaving the family business, kind of like Harry leaving the royal family. So, so I feel like he sees it as some kind of comeuppance or whatever, but it's because he's no longer in control. So he's assigning negative emotions to Nick to justify his own disappointments. That's my take.
I didn't quite get why Alex listened to his father on that. I guess he is a lot more influenced by his father than Nick is. There's a real distance between Nick and Harry. I think Nick takes his mother's side and despises Harry a bit for the way he treats her, whereas Alex is a bit more of a daddy's boy.
Well, he is, and he's been told the whole time, this is all yours. And so I think he kind of kisses up to his dad because he's the heir apparent. But I also feel like there's a kind of just the brotherly resentment. That's what I pick up. There's kind of a brotherly competition. Remember the one time they were playing the tennis and they were like going at each other. So I think it's that. And I think in a way is a little bit of jealousy that Nick had the gumption to go out and do something on his own while he's still stuck taking orders from Papa. So that kind of makes sense to me. I kind of get all of that motivation. And that, by the way, is well motivated.
Yeah. Yes, it is. The boys stuff is, I have to say, that part of the show is always very well motivated pretty well. I really like that part. And so now we get to the fun part. Tess tells Alex that Harry knew they were there. And I was like, yes, awesome. Alex is shocked. He drives off. He's furious.
Let me just say this real quick. What is happening while she's telling him and he's being driving off and hearing the echoes of the announcer.
The commentary when Nick was on that rodeo, and you hear the commentator saying, oh, he's come off, he's getting trampled, medics, where's the medics?
Where's the medics? Right. But in between all of that happening, we see Nick trying to get on a horse. So we're seeing, which I think was brilliant. I really love this because we're really seeing he can't ride, and we see him falling down and hitting the ground hard. He can't ride because of what happened at the rodeo. And we haven't really focused on that. We see a little bit of a limp, but now we see him. And then in the end, he does get on the horse. So he's kind of this huge metaphorical overcoming moment. And, you know, Jessica and I love the metaphorical moments. And then Alex is like, oh, and then we see him take off and hear. Then we hear all the announcement. We hear the backstory, which I thought, again, was a brilliant way to do it. I just thought that was a good way. So it wasn't all like, oh, the announcer was calling for the medics and he was being trampled. We're hearing recall in Alex's head.
That was
beautiful.
Good.
In writing a novel, that would be all the italics.
Yes.
or an actual flashback.
You couldn't do them at the same time. Like, we got the visuals of Alex in the present and the audio of Nick in the past getting trampled. And that will, I think you can't do that in a book. That's a cool thing that you can only do in that TV or
in the film medium. And but we're seeing him struggle to get on the horse because of that accident. And also Alex here, the actor, I can't remember his name. Sorry, you guys.
Aaron
Jeffries, bravo to you. He does such a great job when he's riding in the car. He takes his hat off. He's rubbing his eyes like he's tearing up. He's crying.
But it's like really manly crying. I was like, I believe this. Like,
yes, I believe it. And he looked like he was crying. It was so good.
That was good.
And because all along, all this time, and this is the key here, guys. Motivation. Harry has let him believe that he was the one at fault.
Not only let him believe, but like insinuated that he was to blame.
Insinuated that he was to blame. And then he goes and punches him. He's like, I was only 16, Dad. Well, 16 in my mind, you're kind of old enough, but yet you're still that foolish, especially if you're a guy and you want to ride bulls or whatever they were riding.
I love the way that whole scene plays out. Like, it felt really natural and good. He comes up and he says, did you know? And Harry's response is, who told you? And I was like,
I know,
what
that was
a
brilliant
Harry response. That was
great writing.
And then Alex just gives him a gigantic punch in the face, which was so satisfying. Can I just say, I have been waiting for Alex to punch someone and it to be really satisfying. I want it to be Harry. I want it to be Peter. Like, it's great. Even if it's not that I'm recommending this in real life, but it's satisfying in fiction to like
see it's satisfying someone get their comeuppance. On the screen.
Yeah.
I will say for me, I didn't like it because I get why I get everything you're saying. Yes, I agree. But for me, I'm thinking, and again, this is after the fact, it's already been filmed. We can have the luxury of a second thought. And I'm thinking
20 years later.
Yeah. 20 years later, what if he just walked? It just feels like that's what Alex does. I don't know that we've seen him punch anybody, but it just feels like,
I feel like he's wanted to a lot.
Yeah, maybe so. And it just feels like, I don't know, maybe he's been wanting to punch Harry all this time.
Oh, I think he's been wanting to punch Harry in the face for 40 years. 30 years.
So maybe that was the best and only response. I guess I'm thinking kind of like, you know, you son of a no, 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 no. And
see, I think Nick would do that. I think Alex will punch you. He will hurt you with his hand. So, yeah. Nick will hurt you with his words.
Yeah, I think you're right. So good on you. That was probably the best thing. All right.
And Liz Ryan is there. She sees all this. So she's crying. She's trying to break them up. She's begging him not to go. And he's saying, you know, we didn't have a choice, blah, blah. And Alex is just not taking any of these excuses and he leaves. And Harry is kind of standing there sort of watching him go. And you're like, haha, Harry, you drove one son away so you could favor the other. And now you've lost them both. And then Liz gets in the car and she drives away too. And I really like there's a little moment in there where his face twitches as she goes and he realizes that he didn't expect his wife to leave and he thinks that she's leaving for good. And
but she only has her purse. She only has her handbag.
She only has a purse, yeah. But I like that he's standing there alone and it's the last shot. And I was like, ha ha!
Yeah, I get that. One of the other things that struck me throughout this show and the next when she's with the boys, you would think they were 16. Like, don't leave. Don't leave the house. He's 30 years old. He's an adult man and you're wanting him to live in your house.
Yes.
It just feels so overprotective. So
I have to
say,
realistic for country, older. Okay. Like there is a certain type of farming, older woman with sons who are planned to inherit the farm where that is 100% how that goes down.
There you go. Good to know.
I am also not a fan of it, but it is somewhat realistic. Yeah. And I was making notes about that too. I'm like, she's begging him to come home. He lives next door. He's not.
I know. Yeah. It was kind of like, she can't exist without all of them in the house, which I get, but a simple mom, come on, he's 30, let him go.
I know.
And you can still have a relationship. He just doesn't have to live in your house. But yeah. I love what Jessica brought to us, some culture there that is very much the way of life if you live on a farm or a ranch.
Well, some people, I mean, they're wanting them to live in the same house. That's probably a little extreme, but not as extreme as you would think for some of these groups. But I was wondering as she was sort of like begging them to come back and stuff, and she does it more later in the episode and the next episode too, is she more referring to the rift between them? Like, yes, the boys have only moved next door, but they're not on speaking terms. So maybe what she's more really after is like a weekly family dinner, like regular going back and forth on speaking terms. Maybe they're not living in her house anymore, although I think she actually really does want to live in her house.
No, she was begging Alex. She was begging Alex not to leave. It wasn't even like, don't go angry. Settle up with your father before you leave. You know, it was more like, let me have your bag and carry it back upstairs.
Yeah. So. It was, yep. Yep. I know some of these people really do see these farms as they're like a kingdom that they're handing down to the prince. And if you step foot up,
I get that. That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Sure. I get that.
But yeah, I liked that. I liked the acting that, you know, the actor plays Harry, like that, you know, he didn't say anything. I think I'm not someone who's really great at noticing acting, but I do like things for someone who loves dialogue. If I can notice like a real change in emotion without someone saying or even really doing anything, you just kind of see a slight something in their facial expression. I'm always like, ooh, well done.
Yeah, great job there. It was really a great job.
Now, meanwhile, Claire is planning stables and looking at wedding magazines. She makes a comment about, I don't even know why I hoarded them. logic question, when did she get them and then hold them? Like, who bought all these wedding magazines that have been sitting around? She actually hasn't driven in hours into town to get it. But anyway, I liked that they tried to explain it, but I was like, I don't think that worked.
Well, I will say this. When Craig showed up and he handed Jody the mail, she had like this bundle that looked like it might've been magazines. So
maybe that's how they got there. I think that would be a better explanation than like Claire had hoarded these. What, did she have some thwarted romance when she was young and had looked at wedding magazines before? I don't know. And she just kept them. I don't know.
Right.
Interesting. Anyway, Meg, she's talking to Meg. Meg mentions, you know, learning how to love people with their flaws, and Claire says she doesn't think Peter has any, which what?
And, I'm so in love.
Yeah. And Meg's saying Jody needs to learn that, you know, she's angry at her father, so she's cut him off entirely. She took a penknife of Kevin's and threw it in the paddock earlier, so Meg's looking for the penknife. She thinks Jody will want it back one day. Becky comes over and says that she knows the feeling. We know she's hurting from the situation with Brick. Meg is wanting Terry back. They talk about that a little bit. And Becky kind of helps. Often Becky and Meg's relationship is quite adversarial, but Becky's helping her brainstorm a little bit. She's like, well, could you try this? Could you try that? And Becky's really brainstorming for her and Brick. She's hoping if she can help Meg and Terry get back together, then she and Brick can. And Meg kind of just
Figures out.
Yes, yeah. Which Meg figures out. She's like, are we still talking about me and Terry? But, and the answer is kind of that there is no easy fix for Meg and Terry. Although their situation was, I would say, a lot more extreme, probably similar to Becky and Brick's, but far more extreme. Like Becky and Brick's was just one kiss in, you know, a hurt moment, whereas Meg fully like got back together with her ex-husband without telling Terry. So that was a bit of a different thing. But Becky's
that
not
was very
that
weird.
Way.
I'm just saying, I still think that was weird.
Oh, it was weird. Yeah. but now we're getting to one of my favorite scenes. Oh, I love this scene. Alex comes over to Nick's place and says something about, do you want a beer? Or do you have time for a beer? And Nick's like, oh, it depends how many. And you can see he's really limping. Even though he got on that horse, he paid a price for it. And they're like, what's up with you? And Alex's response is just, dad's a bastard. And Nick's just like, took you a while. And off they go to be friends. And I'm like, oh, this is like a moment that Nick's been waiting for 20 years, is for Alex to realize how much, I think their dad treats Nick much worse than he ever treated Alex. And the pennies dropped announced, and Harry really pitted the boys against each other. And now it's both the boys against Harry. And I love it. I'm such a fan of the bromance. I love a bromance as much as I love a romance. And now this is such a great bromance that we're going to enjoy now. And I'm so excited for it.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Jody's chasing some sheep. She finds a sick one. We go back to the boys. Alex is telling Nick the story. He mentions that Harry had always acted like it was Alex's fault. And I think that might have been a bit of news to Nick as well. He might not have quite realized that. And now they kind of go, well, what now? And Nick's like, well, I need to get this place up and running. Alex is still kind of stuck back with the emotional baggage. He's like, you should have told me about dad. And Nick's like, would you have believed me? And that Alex has to acknowledge, yeah, he wouldn't have. So he joins Nick. They start working together on the farm. Again, the business of this arrangement, they make comments over the next couple episodes that Nick is not paying Alex. I think Alex seems to just have wages saved up and he's happy to just work with Nick for a while. Maybe they'll split the profits when they sell stuff or something. But anyway, for now, I think Alex can afford to just work with his brother, and he's just mad at his dad, and he's realizing he can have a better relationship with his brother, and he's just happy to work with him and have some good bro time.
I love how they start arguing about who's cooking dinner.
Yes.
You know,
oh, that
and
scene's
like,
coming up.
He wants to be first in the shower, and then they got to have a little signal in case, you know, they have someone over.
Yes.
Sorry. I do the Queen's accent. Can't you? I can do a little bit of Australian, but not much. I don't want to insult you guys. That's my bad accent.
Funny. And then Jody rocks up with the sheep, and we don't see a lot of like Jody and Ryan boys interaction. So this is kind of nice. She brings Nick's sheep back to him. I love this moment. I have to say, I think one of the characters, the writers are very good at writing Nick and Alex. They have got such a clear idea, even down to just the little, and maybe this is coming more from the actors too. Like maybe this little, because Nick looks at the sheep and he says, hello, sweetheart. And I'm like, oh, did Miles Pollard just do that, or was that in the script? Because that's just such a tiny moment. It has no effect on the plot, but it's so Nick. And I love when I see
him. I loved it too. That stuck out to me. I love that. I wouldn't be surprised if it was the actor.
Yeah, could have been. Could have been. It was
probably
good.
Didn't have any dialogue there. I was thinking, as a writer, I'm wondering, hey, I brought your sheet back. Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
boring, right? Oh, hello, sweetheart. That's much better. Yeah.
It was a very cute moment. Meanwhile, Becky brings Tess her dress back. Tess had been the fairy godmother in the previous Cinderella episode and lent Becky her dress for the ball. And they have a bit of a fight. Like, Tess is trying to say, oh, keep it. You're going to be going on these dates. You're going to have all these romantic moments with Brick. And Becky's like, no, there will be no romantic moments. And yet they never, like, quite come out and say what happened. And Tess just kind of lets it slide and is like, oh, whatever. She's kind of worrying at this point if she's done a very stupid thing. She's wondering if she was wrong to tell Alex about the truth about the radio. And then she sees Liz Ryan drive up angry and she's like, oh, I think I might regret having told them the truth about this. And Liz comes up, she yells at Tess, she tells her she doesn't belong here, which I thought was a bit of a jump. Like, I get that that's sort of an easy insult for her to go to, but I was like, it wasn't really related to what they were talking about. You don't have to belong there to know that it's wrong to lie to your sons and make them feel guilty for something that wasn't all their fault. So anyway.
I don't understand. And she's all like, and Alex has packed his bags and left. And I'm like, so?
This he's an adult. Man.
I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, this is your fault. You're blaming her. But when she said, you don't belong here, and Tess looks like, you know, like that, those words hit her face. I was like, Tess, why are you listening to her?
What, Tess should be like, you belong here, love?
Yeah, I own 50% of this. What are you talking about? I don't belong here.
Aussie use of the word stuff. You can use it in that context as well.
I know. I just made note you said it. So use it again. Say it again. You're the one who stuffed up.
Yep. Stuffed up. Stuff you. Blah, blah.
Well, what does stuff you mean?
Same as like F you, but you're not swearing.
Oh, yeah. Sweeter. Yeah. Okay. We would say messed up, screwed up.
Oh, yeah. We'd say messed up or screwed up too. Anyway.
They have a bit of a start fight. I'm going to start saying, you stuffed up. What, Rachel?
Aussie. Like, this is just my Aussie. Call things dodgy as well. Yeah. And they'll love it.
Yeah.
Next we have Tess is looking for Claire. She's upset by all this. She wants a bit of comfort from her sister. But Peter's there. Peter's bought Claire a big sign for Drover's Run. I noticed it's, you know, saying it's about the stud and it's got Claire's name on it. It doesn't have Tess's name on it. And they never point out that that's what upsets Tess, but she's certainly not looking happy. And I noticed that, yeah, it doesn't say Tess McLeod or Tess Silverman, whatever name she's going by these days. She never says her last name, so I never know which one she's using. And so Tess goes and rings her cafe friends, but they're busy with customers and they can't talk to her. And you're like, she's really feeling lonely here. Meanwhile, we go back to Liz. She returns home. And I thought it was weird that when she left, like, so Alex leaves, she leaves Harry too. She's mad. Her instinct is not to chase Alex or Nick down or do anything. She just goes to yell at Tess and then she goes back home. I don't know. Maybe she was letting Alex cool off. And Harry's standing at the window. And as she walks up, he sort of doesn't turn around at first. And then he kind of slowly does. And he says, I didn't think you were coming back. And he even squeezes out a tear. And I was like, they have a big hug. And I'm like, I like that. And this was something that I probably didn't appreciate so much when I watched this episode. It was more when I started the next episode and they returned to this moment back in the previously on. And I thought, I actually really like that Liz came back and that we saw that for the first time, Harry was afraid that someone had left him, because it shows it adds more depth to Harry's character. He can be hurt, not by many people, not apparently much by Nick, or hardly even Alex, but the one person that he actually does care about, even though he's terrible at showing it and he doesn't actually treat her very well, he does want his wife to stay.
I thought we saw that in another episode where she was mad at him.
I think we do. Yeah, it is a consistent pattern.
Yeah, and he's like, no. And I do want to just quickly jump back for a second.
Mm.
After they see the sign, which, by the way, I missed that it just had her name on it. So that kind of is, it wasn't clearly pointed out. So I can see more now why, what the motivation they were going with Tess is like, am I not a part of this? And she's not the one who wants to train. She can't train.
There wasn't a shot on the name of the sign or anything. I just kind of noticed in the background.
Yeah, it was. She leaves and she calls her buddies back in the city and says, how's it going in the shop? How's everything at the cafes going? She kind of gives them a little advice and they're like too busy to talk to her. So that's kind of this reach out, like maybe I need to find something else to do. Let me see if this opportunity is still there. So I thought that was really cool. And then we go to Liz coming back to the farm. How was that?
And then, so after we see sort of that moment where Harry and Liz reunite, and I also like that Liz seemed sort of, she was like, oh, a bit sad that Harry had sort of been upset that he thought she'd gone. Like, I kind of liked seeing them as a bit of a team. Even if they completely screw up, they're still kind of there for each other. And oh, he's a real dirtbag. So, like, he doesn't deserve a wife that loves him, but he has one anyway. And I don't know. I feel like we see so many relationship breakdowns in real life and fiction that anytime I kind of see people getting through hard stuff but choosing to stay anyway, I'm like, oh, there's just something a little bit beautiful about that. So Harry still needs to change his ways, but I like that Liz is willing to stick at something.
I don't think he realizes that a lot of his pain is his own pain. Yeah. But anyway, a lot of people are like that, I suppose.
Now we go over to Jody, who's hanging out with Nick, which is a combination that we have like almost never seen in this show. There was like that one time they danced and it was a really weird vibe, but now they're kind of hanging out a little bit, and she's acting more, I guess they don't hang out because she's an immature 18-year-old who has nothing in common with him. But now that she's working, they're chatting about the farm and she's talking about how she wants to buy her own farm and be like him and blah, blah, blah. And Nick, this is another great Nick moment, by the way, can I say? Big brother Nick comes and shares some wisdom, and he says that all the things he did, you know, make him prove that he's just like his dad. You know, he saw a good deal, he had business savvy, he turned a profit, and he's like, that would just prove, you know, in all the things I do to try and get away from my dad, it just makes me all the more like him, but in the good ways, not the bad ways. And the penny drops for Jody that she doesn't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater. She can appreciate the good things about her dad while still feeling hurt and rejecting the bad things. And I love seeing Nick drop some wisdom.
Yeah, I thought that was really good. And then the next scene is Jody looking for the knife that she threw into
And Meg already has it, and Jody just tells her not to gloat.
Right.
Meg says one of the hardest things of being a parent is finding out you're not perfect. And I like that Jody sort of replied back that there's a big difference between not perfect and, you know, sort of abandoning them. But I think they made the point that you don't have to hate the person just because you hate what they did. And I think that was nice because I think that's a really universal thing that a lot of people can connect to emotionally. And that was a nice theme to have through their episode.
I agree.
Meanwhile, we go back to Harry and Liz. Harry's speculating that Alex will be back. He does not seem concerned about whether or not Nick ever returns. And then he answers a phone call and finds out that Peter is in fact married. And he tells Liz, and this was sort of another moment, I think this was really the one, more than them being reunited, this was more the one where I enjoyed watching Harry and Liz together, because they've just had this like huge fight. Their relationship is on very rocky ground. And but when he's got some really interesting gossip to share, she's like, oh, no. And all of a sudden they're kind of, for a moment, they're on the same team. And I think they're both, I think Harry has ulterior motives, but I also do wonder, in that moment, I felt like there was a piece of genuine concern for Claire's well-being. I don't know if you read that into it as well.
I did, because, you know, Jack was his friend. Her father was his friend. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like we did see, and Jessica and I'll talk about this in a second when we move on down the line in the story, that we saw a different side of Harry, which I thought deepened his character. But yeah, it was kind of a fun moment when he finds out that he has kids. So I was watching this a couple weeks ago, and Jessica hadn't caught up yet. And of course, I'm in Florida. She's in Australia. And I grab my phone because she's been saying all along, I think Peter's married. And I grab my phone and I'm like, he's married, all caps. And then, you know, hours later, whenever she's up or can grab her phone, I don't remember where we were in our time zones. She's like, what? Oh, no. It's like, at first she's like, who's married? What? So we had some fun with that. How about you guys? Guys who was listening and you're fans of the show, what was your reaction to this? Because it's crazy. Jessica, yes. Go ahead.
And it was fun, like, texting each other about it. I was working, actually. It was like, I think, mid-morning of the workday, and I was like concentrating on my work, and I get this text and I'm like, he's married. Did she text the wrong person? Like, what's she talking about? And then I was like, oh, no, she's talking about Peter. I can't believe it. Oh, made me laugh so much. It was great.
Isn't that fun?
And then when I caught up and I saw that moment myself, and I heard him mention that he's not just married, he's got kids. And I text you again. I'm like, he's not just married, he's a dad as well. This makes it so much worse. And yeah, it was fun. So meanwhile, we go back to Jody. She's having car problems on the way into town. Her radiator's leaking. Craig comes and he's got some spare water. And she's like, at this point, they're not really talking. And he pulls over and she's like, he says, like, you know, are we talking? And she's like, well, do you have water? And he's like, yep. And she's like, then I guess I'm still talking to you.
That was cute. That was really cute. Yeah, that was really cute.
Not afraid to use him for what he's got. And then she does. She says sorry to Craig. She says, I'm happy to forget about it if you want to go out. He doesn't seem so sure, because these Drovers Run women seem to change their minds an awful lot. So I liked his caution there, that while he is keen, he's not desperate. And he has some emotion involved in this. And he's like, I don't know, you girls have really been, well, here's another context of the word, they've really been stuffing him around. And so.
Okay, tell me that one, stuffing him around.
Yeah, like, how do you explain stuffing someone around?
Jerking them around. We would say jerking them.
Yeah, like jerking them. Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, I like that moment of hesitation in his face. Meanwhile, Tess rides over to Nick again. This is like the most conversations they've ever had in a single episode. And she makes a comment that Claire wouldn't notice if Tess was missing. And she says she sees the boys hanging out. And she's like, it's great to see the two of you talking. And Nick, ever so perceptive, looks at her and quietly says, and I'm guessing that was with some help from you. And so he has figured out who told Alex it must have been Tess. And and she just doesn't respond and just walks off. And I'm like, oh, Nick, you're so good. He's like so emotionally in tune and perceptive and stuff. And while Alex is just like
he's
a bull,
sensitive brother,
bashing around into things, Nick is the surgeon.
Yes, he's the sensitive brother. Mm-hmm. Alex is not. And I a little comment here real quick. The vibe between Tess and Alex is like they were never lovers. It's a little bit odd.
You could forget that they
were they together?
Dated.
Yeah.
There's like no residual awkwardness. Yep.
Or no digs at each other, which I guess is kind of nice, but at the same time, I think there should be something, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm. A little bit. Meanwhile, Claire and Peter are at the stables. They're looking at Claire's horse, Blaze, who's pregnant. Harry drives up, and then Claire's comment is, oh, bloody Harry. What's he here for? Like, he wants something. And Peter thinks she's being paranoid. And sure enough, Harry walks up, says he wants a private word with Claire. And she straight away is like, there's no secrets with me and Peter. And he doesn't come straight out and say it. But he talks about that the stables are a big commitment. It's kind of like a marriage. Peter seems to sense trouble and tries to intervene and sort of head him off. And Harry just stops and says, you know that Liz and I want the best for you. And Claire's kind of like, cool beans. See ya. And so Harry goes off and talks to Becky. Now, again, folks, if you're unaware, I believe that the actors who play Harry and Becky are actually in real life father and daughter, which makes...
That's so cool.
Yeah, it makes these whole interactions over the next couple of episodes really interesting. And kudos to them for their acting skills. I would never have known. While I was watching them, I think she has his nose. I was like looking for similarities. I think they have the same nose. But
all right, I'm going to look.
I did not like you totally believe that they were Harry and Becky and hated each other in this one. So great acting, everybody. And he tells Becky that Peter's married, and she says, well, I won't tell her. And he's like, what are you afraid you'll lose your job? And she says, no, I'm afraid of what it'll do to her, which is valid. She is so invested in this relationship. And he says, it's got to come from someone close, and I know you'll do the right thing. So typical Harry, manipulative guilt trip. But I have to say, if I was a guy and I found out that a woman in my circle was being cheated on, I would not tell her, especially the sort of, you know, antagonistic sometimes relationship he and Claire have, I wouldn't tell her myself. I would sort of tell some kind of trusted girlfriend as an intermediary to break that news as gently as possible and offer her some support when she finds out. So I know that we're kind of seeing Harry's a bad guy a little bit here, but I didn't think, and I think later on characters imply that he did a terrible thing by making Becky do this, but I'm not sure that that was as awful as we are seeing.
Well, we talked about here that Harry wants her to know, but he doesn't be the one. So our theory was, if he really wants Drover's Run and he really kind of doesn't care that much about Claire, he just cares about expanding his own empire, then he would walk right up to her and tell her, or he would pull her aside and go, Peter's married. So, but now what we see is a little bit of his father's heart, and he's just had this riff with his sons. He's had this riff with his wife. So maybe he's actually being a little bit more human and being a little bit more tender. And so he goes and tells Becky because he is concerned. And then she's like, well, I'm not going to tell her. And then he pulls out. Now he's back to Harry. Well, are you afraid of losing your job? So he kind of is, he's a little bit trying to manipulate her into doing it. But I think he genuinely wants concerned about Claire. He wants her to know, and he doesn't want to be the one to tell her. So it's kind of showing that other caring side of him, that if he was really as bad as we all think he is, he would walk right up and say, Peter's married, and bust up the whole thing, and maybe hope that he can come in and scoop up Drover's Run for a song.
So. Mm-hmm. I think so. Oh, and something, I meant to talk about this back when he first found out that Peter's married. I think, like, this is a huge thing that we have to talk about. The assumptions made at that point. So he finds out that Peter's married. We're assuming, and everyone's immediately like, oh no, that's terrible. We have to tell Claire. So many assumptions have been made in like 2 seconds that I feel like they needed a scene or at least a little bit of dialogue to go through. So for starters, we're assuming that Peter and his wife are not already separated. Like, he might be legally married still, but they could have broken up 18 months ago.
Yeah, so we don't know any of that.
We don't know any of that. Maybe his wife cheated on him. Like, we don't know anything about that. Two, we're assuming that Claire doesn't know. Maybe she knows that he's married, but they're separated. Maybe she knows that he's married and she's okay with being the other woman. That is not something I would think of Claire's character. It doesn't seem to fit her character, and Harry knows her well. So that's probably a fair assumption that he doesn't think that's what's happening. But, you know, I felt like just a moment of speculation, though, if Liz could have gone, like, do you think she knows? Or if she could have gone, maybe they're separated, or, you know, something. And him just be like, no, the guy said, like, they've been seen living together, or something, like, they're definitely still together. I don't know.
There's no legal document saying they're separated or divorced. Interesting, though, if we follow your storyline, when Becky finally tells her, which we're going to get to, it would have been a real twist.
Yeah.
If she would have said,
if Claire was like, yeah, I know.
That would have been, I'm always looking for the twist. I'm always like telling authors, I don't know, turn it upside down. That would have been the twist. That would have been the twist.
It would have
love
been.
That.
I feel like it would have been very out of character for Claire, but it would have been a twist. That's for sure. And it wouldn't have been so out of character if him and his wife were like already separated.
Yeah.
Interesting. Anyway, all the different things you could do with it. So we go back now to, this is another fun scene. Alex and Nick are working. And I like this scene because.
Let me just back up one moment and say this. But to be honest, to the story and to who the people that they are and the world they live in, I think it's a huge assumption that if Peter was married and Claire knew, she wouldn't have been with him. And mm-hmm. so I think that's what Harry's motivation is, probably the writers and all the characters. So it would have been a real like blow my hair back if she would have said, yeah, I know they're separated. That would have been like, what? Okay. Now the brothers are working together. There we go.
Yeah. And I laughed at this scene because it had almost nothing to do with the plot. Like had the show been a little bit too long, you could have cut this scene and you would not have lost anything substantial, but it was just nice to see they're working together. They're bantering about who's going to do the cooking and the washing, what their signal's going to be if either of them has a girl over. And it was just nice. Like, I just really liked it. And then we go back to the real plot.
I think it is a part of the plot. I would call this a sequel scene mm-hmm. where we're getting to see that they're back to who they are. We get it's a feel good scene. It's beautifully shot. They've got some angles and some framing that's really pretty.
And they're like picking up heavy bags. They're looking good.
Yeah. You know, they're showing them actually working the ranch. I love Alex trying to weld something and he's just holding the mask in front of, he's not wearing the mask. He's kind of holding it in his hand and they're just going on about, you know, how they're going to live their life together. So it does it add to, I think it does add to their relationship and to their state of mind. And so that might play out later. So,
and I like them working out how they're now going to be. I mean, even though these guys are probably in their early 30s, this is what, you know, I was doing with my friends at 23 as we all lived in a share house together, you know, for the first time. We don't have mum picking up after us. We're getting to be adults on our own for the first time. We're hanging out with our friends 24/7 now as housemates. You know, they don't have Harry and Liz bossing them around all the time anymore. They can be slobs if they want. They can do whatever they want. They can have lots of fun. And I just love the feeling of excitement that I'm kind of getting off Alex, because he never expected to leave Killarney. He never really thought he'd be striking out on his own and this adventure with his brother. And it's just like this sense of glee that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was really good.
Mm. Now we're going back over to Drover's. Claire is showing Becky plans for the stables. Becky at this point is avoiding Claire. She's saying she doesn't know anything about that stuff. She's got lots of work to do and she's just trying to put off this decision. At dinner, Peter's talking about how Australian bloodlines are playing for the stables. Tess is bringing up that there's no contract. She could be liable. Peter's sort of real... unnecessarily, I did not get why Peter and Claire were being so weird about this and why they weren't just upfront with Tess. It made no sense to me. Like, I felt like Peter was kind of being a bit skeezy and trying to cover up his marriage, but then I was like, but this has nothing to do with that. Like, how does him not being upfront with Tess with the contract benefit him in any way? And why wouldn't Claire have just shown it to Tess? Like, that didn't make sense to me. But anyway, Tess is off in a huff about it. Claire just like, she'll be right. And then she kind of looks at Peter and says, there's nothing to worry about, is there? And he's like, no. And I couldn't see any, you almost feel like Peter has an ulterior motive, but I don't know. I don't think he does. I don't know what it would be. Meanwhile, Becky.
I don't know either.
Yeah,
I agree with you.
Becky's ticked. She gets in the ute. She goes to the train, which is her spot. I like that callback. That was a callback to like episode 3 or 4 of season 1. When she's upset, she goes and she watches the train and she drinks a beer sitting on the bonnet of her ute. And so another Australian term, by the way, we call the hood of the car the bonnet.
Yes.
And so when we go on the farm as kids, we would always go bonnet sliding, which would mean we'd take like the old bonnet off a car, tie it behind the ute, and we'd go flying around the wet paddocks, and it was lots of fun.
Oh, that is fun.
So meanwhile, Tess goes to Meg and they talk about giving Claire space. Craig comes over and he asks out Jody, and he's driven all the way out from town. She's like, what? You didn't ring? You just drove all the way out here to ask me? And he's like, well, yeah, but it's a great way to make you say yes. which worked. And I like the effort that he went to. If he was like a gross, slimy guy, then that would have been creepy. But because he's a pretty sweet
character.
He's so
cute.
So it was just nice.
He's so cute.
He's willing to invest like that time.
I like him.
It was nice. Meg's talking about Peter. She's saying he's a nice bloke. Meg, we all know, has bad judgment when it comes to men. So I think the fact that Meg approves of him indicates something's wrong.
Well, it is her daughter, so she could have more objective taste for her daughter. The thing that caught me in this scene was she goes, just watch the drinking and driving. And I'm like, watch the drinking and driving, yeah, like only drink and drive a little bit.
The drinking and driving. How about don't
do it? So one of my favorite movies these days is To All the Boys I Loved Before.
Oh, and I so, love that movie.
And so when Peter Kavinsky comes to pick up Laura Jean Covey.
Covey.
Oh, what's his name? Who plays the father? Oh, his head just went out of
my head. Yes, I know that head. Guy. He's in so many things. He's so great. He's in my Greek Wedding.
Yes.
John someone.
Yeah, it's John something. So when she goes up to get her stuff to get ready to go out, he looks at him and he looks at Peter and he goes, no drinking, no drugs, no hands.
Yes.
And
I was like, I love that.
That's a beautiful. I'm like, that's what Meg should have said. No yes. drinking. No driving, drinking, no drugs, and no hands. That was such a great line.
Those movies. He's such a
I love those movies. Love them. Love them to pieces.
So good. But in this case, Meg was actually referring to Peter, was what I was talking about. She's talking to Tess about Peter and saying that he's a nice bloke as well.
Yes. Oh, that's right. Mm, yeah. I'm watching it as we're talking. Yeah, I missed that.
You're right. She did say the drink driving thing, but yeah, then she starts talking about Peter and Tess is, it's sinking into Tess that Claire really will marry him. And she looks unhappy. But again, I wrote here, I don't know why Tess is unhappy. Is she lonely? Is she jealous? Or is she worried about the contract? They've hinted at all three, but they've never really shown why, because I mean, she was frowning at Peter long before the contract. So I don't think that's the only thing.
I think so too. And if she wants to see the contract, don't
go pick it up.
Be huffy about it at dinner. Just go, I'm coming into the office. I want to see the contract.
Yep.
You know, and just what's the deal here? So, yeah.
Then we see Claire walking downstairs. She's only wearing Peter's shirt. She finds him out on the veranda. He says he can't sleep. They talk about how he could hide away here with her forever. She says that's all she wants. And then we see Becky at the train and it's that callback to season one. She's drinking and she's upset. And that's the last shot of the show. So this was really, really sort of a cliffhanger. It felt at the time, I felt like it was part of a double episode, but then as I kept watching, I mean, this is actually just a big storyline that's going to take place across the season. It's not even a triple episode really. Like it's just, this is sparking off a lot of drama, more drama than I expected. There's more to this than I thought.
Yeah, there's a lot of great setup and some storylines here. So I feel like this is what we've been kind of building to all along. Mm-hmm. And so now we're invested in the characters, we're invested in their lives and what's happening here with Peter. Uh-oh. And you see Claire loving on him and him saying he could be here. Interesting, later on we're going to find out. We actually hear his wife's voice. Didn't sound like to me somebody who was separated, you know what I'm saying? So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, but we'll talk about that next time.
We will. Now, in the meantime, if you want to follow us on social media and enjoy some of the pictures we put up, mainly of Alex wearing his bluey and lifting heavy bags of things. I think that's the most popular one that we've posted so far. and chat about McLeod's Daughters. You can find us at McLeod's Pod on Facebook and Instagram. Rachel, where can people find you and your romance novels on the internet?
Everywhere. Rachel Houck. Just go to rachelhouck.com. It's H-A-U-C-K. And click on books and you can find links to go to your favorite online retailers or your brick and mortar retailers. And you can follow me on all my social media from that space as well.
Mm-hmm. And I am at Jessica Kate Writing on Facebook and Instagram. JessicaKateWriting.com, and you can also find out about my books, including A Girl's Guide to the Outback. And we will see you all in 2 weeks for a new episode to discuss all this drama. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Hey, guys, just wanted to say a quick thank you to composer Bobby Abbott for our theme song. If you want to check out more about him, then you can go to Bobby Abbott Music on Facebook, and that's Abbott with two B's and two T's. See you all next time.